Well, let's just see how brave he is, shall we?
Phil's Osophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
Now it is time for Too Wretched for Radio with the one, with the only, with the preparing for the Shepherd's Conference, Phil Johnson. You studying hard today, sir?
I am. And troubled that you're going to test my bravery. I'll tell you right off, I'm not brave. I'm frequently rash and stupid, and I say things too bluntly, but there's not a brave bone in my body. I'm a chicken.
Well, I'm not sure that I think of the word chicken. You actually, Phil, an attribute of yours that just absolutely blows me away is your consistency, that you are willing to say what you believe is biblical and right, regardless of who is hearing it and what the implications might be. You, if you're convinced biblically, you just say it.
Yeah, I do try to do that. I learned that from John MacArthur. That, I think, is probably the quality of his that I admire the most.
Not to be pugnacious, because that would make you unfit to be an elder, but somebody who defends the truth, who is willing to speak up and to not be a coward in the face of criticism. So with that in mind, Phil Johnson, this week you're going to be at the Shepherd's Conference. By the way, just so I can bury the lead here, which, do you notice that in evangelical Christianity, how many times the lead gets buried in articles?
Yeah.
Drives me bonkers. You're a writer. Agree. That, I would think, would just make you ballistic. It'll be 7 reasons that you should read your Bible at 8 a.m. And sometimes they don't even get to it, or it's like paragraph 18. Just get to it.
No, you know what the culprit is there, I think, is internet clickbait. You have these clickbait ads that tell you, you know, find out the reason why this guy did that thing. And you have to click through 40 different pages before you get to that answer. And I think actually people have been influenced by that and copy that in their writing style. It's maddening. I'm at the point where if I click on something to find out the answer to something and it's not right there on the first page, I give it up, or else I Google it. You can find the answer pretty quickly that way.
2 paragraphs. Okay, I can understand if you don't hit it in the first paragraph. Sometimes a story or a setup can be helpful, but you better get to it by the second paragraph. And I just find constantly it is just so buried. So trying not to do that, but before we get to what makes you brave or not test, Phil, what are you going to be preaching about at Shepherd's?
It's interesting because the very thing you started talking about there, and that is speaking the truth in love. I'm talking from the second half of 2 Timothy chapter 2. It's where Paul starts out by saying, you know, be an approved workman, rightly dividing the word. But then he goes on to talk about how important it is to correct people with gentleness rather than, you know, constantly blasting people. So it's a difficult message for me. It steps on my own toes. And a lot of people hearing it are going to say, physician, heal thyself.
Well, don't worry, Phil. We'll be the judge of that, and we'll just talk about it behind your back. Don't forget Ephesians.
I'm
Ephesians
already
4.
Under conviction, so.
All right, you know, speaking truth in love, the Greek word study actually is not speaking the truth in love. It is truthing in love. We're to be truthing. It gives more of an emphasis to true communication lovingly.
Right.
You can just feel free to use that one. You do not have to give me credit at the Shepherd's Conference, where you will be hosting a panel discussion. Who will be your guests, sir?
I'm actually doing several of the Q&As. I have a Q&A on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Wow.
The one on Wednesday is it's a panel of some of the plenary speakers. It includes Mark Dever, Ligon Duncan, Al Mohler, Sinclair Ferguson, and John MacArthur, and I have to ask them questions.
And what might you be asking them, Phil?
Well, I'm not going to leak that ahead of time because I don't want anybody to say, no, don't bring that subject up.
I see. Okay, so you're being strategic.
Yes, I am.
All right.
They haven't given me any parameters or told me to steer clear of anything or whatever. I'm just to ask questions. And so I'm going to ask the questions that I want to hear answers to.
Okay, then I'll tell you what I would want to do if I were moderating the panel. How do you like them apples?
Yeah, maybe it'll be helpful for me to stay out of trouble by avoiding what you might do.
Well, I'm here to help. The people who are on the panel, the recent issue within the last year, it's obvious. It's social justice issues, and we have repeatedly made it clear here. You need to understand the individual's position on the issue before making just a blanket statement that everybody is a Marxist. It's not the right way to label an entire group of people. And there are a group of people who are going to be speaking at the Shepherd's Conference who have different opinions on the social justice stuff. I would just want to lovingly with brothers say, all right, let's just understand where you're at on this thing. Exactly, because it's been such a clouded, confused conversation that's happened. Just having clarity would be profoundly helpful. That's what I do.
All right.
Come on, take the bait, man. Take it.
No, I am not going to leak any of my intentions ahead of time because it is one of those situations, like you point out, where you've got a panel of men who have historically agreed pretty much on everything they've ever spoken publicly about. But here's an issue that they do disagree on. And so, I think a lot of people are going to be wanting answers to some of those questions. But I'm not going to
say what you're going to do. Fine. You know what, Phil? Nobody listens to this. It's not like anybody will find out. All right, how much money do you want? How much? Just name your, what is it? How much? Come on. Everybody has a price. You're not getting it, huh? All right, I would like to share with you an article.
I'm not going to leak it.
And I want to approach this. Not only do I think Mark Dever is a brother, I like Mark Dever.
There's probably no more likable person in the evangelical world than him. He's almost as likable as you.
Well, I hope he's more likable than that. He was joined by Trillia Newbell, who is the Director of Community Outreach at the Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission. That is a long business card. And he said some things that are causing people to be concerned. And I want to not trash and bash Mark, but we're working through this stuff because this whole conversation about social justice, it's kind of new to evangelical Christianity. So let's just see if we can bring a little clarity to what Mark said. This was in that panel that he was doing with Isaac Adams. I don't know that fellow. Here's what he said, quote, "I think in different historical settings, you do have to go ahead and be known to oppose a particular party. If we were in Nazi Germany in the 30s, I think you just have to be known for opposing the Nazis. I don't think we're there. And until we get there, I think it's better for Christians to be able to disagree on political solutions and still trust each other's sincere adherence to the gospel." Was there anything in that statement that raised an eyebrow?
Yeah, the sentence where he says, "I don't think we're there yet." The normal figure that's thrown around is that Nazi Germany exterminated 6 million Jews. America has put to death 600 million infants in the womb. And I think ultimately, certainly in the scope of eternity, if not sometime in the future of world history, people are going to look back at what was done in the name of, women's health rights and all that, to abort babies, and say that was a worse travesty than Nazi Germany, which is not to minimize the travesty of Nazi Germany. That was the blemish on the face of the 20th century. But abortion and the history of abortion in America alone is every bit as ugly if you look at it, if you really want to face what's happening there. And listen especially to the recent rhetoric from the Democratic Party and some of the people who are now arguing that even a baby who is born alive, who survives an abortion, should be allowed to die or put to death. It's barbaric. It's inhuman. I don't know how anybody can look at that and say we're not where Nazi Germany was, because we are. It's our legislators and people in our government who are campaigning. In fact, one of the two major political parties, this is a plank in their platform, campaigning for the continuation of that and actually trying to make it easier and easier to get abortions. And it now has veered into the realm of infanticide, the death of babies who've already been born alive.
To not say that the current Democratic Party is just really, really wicked because of its position on life alone. I personally, I still do not see how a Christian can in good conscience suggest even that voting for that party is acceptable. I can't get over that issue. Phil, let me just go back and read that last sentence again. I don't think we're there. And until we get there, I think it's better for Christians to be able to disagree on political solutions and still trust each other's sincere adherence to the gospel. So if somebody says, I'm voting for Hillary Clinton, I know she's pro-choice, but there are other issues, and I don't think that the Republican Party has done a very good issue with the abortion issue anyway, therefore, I'm voting for Hillary, and we should just accept one another because we're not Nazi Germany yet.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I gather he's saying in that statement. Is there a date on that, by the way?
Yeah, that just happened. I've got this from February 25th.
Okay, because that same week, one of the podcasts that's out there posted an excerpt from Mark Dever's sermon the week after the election in 2016, where he was saying similar things. So this was before the Democrats got into, you know, killing
babies
born
alive.
You've got it. All right.
I got it. Hold on.
And he was arguing against one issue voting and used some of those same arguments.
Yep, here it is. I think one of the veins to racial unity in the U.S. is single issue voting. I know, dear brothers, Wayne Grudem, John Piper will celebrate single issue voting. All right, let's just stop there. Phil, make the case that it is appropriate to be a single issue voter. And that issue is life for the Christian.
Right. Well, here's the conflict. And I intend, actually, I'll be having dinner with Dever and some other guys this week. And I do intend to raise this question with him. I want to ask him about it because he himself made the case for one issue voting when he said, of course, we wouldn't vote for Hitler and the Nazis. Right. Why? Because what they were doing and what they stood for was so supremely wicked that that one issue, their treatment of the Jewish people, their anti-Semitism, which took them to the point of murder, was so egregiously evil that you just couldn't cast a vote in favor of them at all. And why he wouldn't say a party that's campaigning for the continued slaughter of unborn infants is in the same vein, I'm not sure. And you know, you and I have had this conversation before. I'm not one to get into partisan politics. When I say, you know, the Democratic Party is doing this, I'm not campaigning for the Republicans. I'm just saying this is a plank in the platform of the Democratic Party. I honestly don't see how any Christian in good conscience can support a candidate who's supporting that kind of legislation.
Okay.
I don't see how it's substantially different from voting for the Nazis, other than the fact that we live in the midst of it and we try to think the best of our own culture. And so somehow that doesn't seem as bad to us. But my question is, how is that not so bad? You just consider the death toll of 600 million infants who've been aborted. That, you know, in the beginning, the argument, and I remember this from the 1970s, when they were arguing in favor of abortion, even the most ardent abortion advocates at the time were saying, we want abortion to be rare. We just want it to be safe. We don't want it to be a common thing. And yet 600 million infants have been murdered in the womb. I don't see how anybody can minimize the evil of that or say that, you know, systemic racism, for example, which is a debatable concept. How can you say that's worse? It's certainly not responsible for the death of 600 million humans.
Well, here is Mark Dever's rationale, so let's treat it fairly. Here's what he said. Many evangelicals in America who are white have assumed that this abortion is the only moral issue to take. And I appreciate the logic. I understand. They're saying that human life is valuable. All right, so he's basically saying, I get those Christians, but now comes his rationale for accepting a believer who has a different take.
Yeah, but I think he's subtly and probably unintentionally twisted what I'm saying. He's misrepresented my point. I don't say that's the only moral issue.
Right.
I just say it's such a significant one that it trumps all the others.
That's a good point. All right, here it comes.
I mean, it's possible that a greater issue would come along, but I honestly don't see any kind of immorality on the horizon that's going to result in the death of, you know, hundreds of millions of people.
But if it did, they could stop dropping A-bombs and spreading anthrax, maybe. Short of that,
yeah.
I agree with you. Okay, so here's what Mark Dever said. What I want to do as Christians, though, is leave space for someone to make a moral decision that is other than that. Because I can imagine people who believe the Bible is true and Jesus is the only way looking and thinking, I think abortion is murder, but I think that nobody who thinks abortion is murder has been able to end it by getting into the White House like they've been promising for 40 years. So the argument from people voting for pro-abortion candidates is the pro-life people, they haven't overturned Roe v. Wade anyway. So that is just, it's not the key issue, not because it's not a grosser travesty of justice, but because politicians aren't addressing it. So let's see if they can, the other party can address other issues that might actually help people. I think that's what he's saying.
Yeah. Well, I just think that's a bad argument, given the comparison of the Leo lineup. I don't even know what he has in mind, but probably racism and poverty and things like that. So you give this lineup of moral issues, and some of them are significant issues. Nevertheless, abortion, from a Christian point of view, if you have a biblical worldview, and Mark does, he says he believes abortion is murder. I don't see how you can say that a policy that results in 600 million murders is somehow that's okay to set on the shelf because our politicians haven't solved it yet. I don't think politicians are going to be the solution to the abortion issue. I don't think you can solve this problem by mere politics. I think what America needs is sweeping revival that readjusts the worldview of our entire culture. And I don't think you can vote that in by politics, but you can by politics, and this has been proven, drive the country further and further into a immoral state. And that's the problem with voting for candidates who are so fiercely in favor of abortion that literally now they're proposing laws that allow doctors to kill infants that are born alive. That's just so inhuman. I don't see how it could even be on the table for discussion. But, you know, that's where we are. And I can't see throwing up my arms and saying, well, the Republicans haven't solved it. No candidate has solved it. Therefore, you might as well just skip over this issue and cast your vote based on other matters.
You know, if I could, as an aside, and you and I are on the same page, Phil, this is nobody, we're not candidating for a party or a politician. That's just not what we do here. But it seems to me that conservatives or Republicans, they have done some things to save babies' lives. I just read millions are being cut from Planned Parenthood. that has to save lives. You know, the Mexico City policy that has to save lives. Some stuff has happened that is positive that the Democrats would never do.
Yeah, it was. I think Ben Sass, the Republican senator from Nebraska, who proposed a bill that would outlaw the killing of it was something about the abortion survivors protection law or something like that. So that if a baby survived an abortion, it would be illegal to put them to death or even to let them die. And that was summarily voted down, which is
by Democrats.
Unbelievable. Yeah, by Democrats and a few Republicans. You know, again, I'm not defending the Republican Party. I think there's a lot of corruption there as well. Politics is a corrupt business. It's why I don't think ultimately the solution is political. But like you say, there's a common grace element even in the laws that are passed by our politicians, where some things that happen are better than other things. And I think as Christians, we do have a duty to sort of watch and be aware and not vote for people who are going to make the worst things happen.
Here's the conclusion from that particular quote. Mark Devers said, and there are a bunch of other things that can happen that this other candidate, in other words, not the pro-life candidate, is going to do that will help my people in my community. And so they make a study decision. I think it would be a morally respectable option. So that the reason that I thought it was important to bring this up, as much as we love Mark Devers, is because this is new to evangelical Christianity. And this argument, I see its force. I don't accept it, but I do see the power behind the argument that, hey, because of this, they're not getting the job done with the life issue. There are some other issues that are super important. It's okay. I think, Phil, that argument is going to persuade a lot of people to vote for Hillary or Bernie or whomever.
Yeah, I fear you're right, because I think there's a younger generation of Christians coming along who, because a lot of them have been indoctrinated in a postmodern worldview in the secular schools and whatever, just, you know, infused with bad ideas from their entertainment, even, they're susceptible to arguments like that. But what troubles me about that argument is the vagueness of it. He says some other things that might be done. What is he talking about? What are the specifics? I wish he would have been more specific, because I'd like to know what he's talking about. He mentions the community in which he ministers, and that's Washington, D.C. So I envision a congregation full of Democratic politicians, and that could be influencing how, you know, Mark looks at these things. I don't know. I'm looking forward to talking to him about it.
Well, that's what I'd pursue if I were moderating the panel, but that's just me, Phil. All right, I've got a question for you, though, about voting, because this is being introduced as a new way to think about the idea. And so while we kind of have a rash about politics, let's work through it. We've been talking about the national level, presidential candidates, senators, congresspeople who vote on these issues. What about a local race that it's the city council race? They're not going to be dealing with the life issue. Could I, as a Christian, vote for a Democrat on that level?
Well, I'm not going to say no, but I sure wouldn't do it. I don't want to help a party whose official, and it's not just the abortion issue, their official lineup of issues that they support include all sorts of LGBTQ ideas that are hostile to biblical righteousness. And so, the party itself is so corrupt, I'd have a hard time even voting for a local politician. But I can envision a situation where, you know, maybe the competing candidate is so corrupt or so stupid or whatever that the best choice, if the best choice is a Democrat, I don't know. Don't know what I would do.
Phil Johnson.
I have been known to abstain in elections when I didn't like either candidate.
When are you going to learn your lesson? We don't use the word stupid in our current culture. All right, let me just say this. If you recall, the original challenge, the question was, is Phil Johnson brave? I just brought up a subject that, look, it's sensitive anyway. What compounds it is Mark Dever, and you are going to be having dinner together tomorrow night. You're going to be doing a panel discussion together. You're going to be at a conference together, and you are still willing to, I believe, lovingly speak truth, even about Mark Dever, somebody with whom we disagree. But, Phil, the line was clearly drawn. You're not calling Mark a heretic. He's not apostate. At this moment, all I would ask for is just clarity.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, I love Mark. He's a great teacher when he opens the scripture and teaches out of it. I don't like his comments on politics, but he rarely does that. So it's unusual for him. And my concern just is to find out from him, does this signify a drift or a change or a shift in your thinking? Where do you intend to go with this? And what's the line beyond which you won't go? Because it's true about a host of issues that are related to the social justice thing. Some of my friends have surprised me and disappointed me in the way they've embraced what seems to me to be a kind of leftover set of ideas from the emerging church movement. It's like a subset of emerging church arguments that now are being put forth by some of my friends. And, that troubles me. It could, in the long run, if they continue to go that way, take us in totally different directions where we wouldn't be speaking in conferences together. I don't want to see that. And so
what I hear you saying is you are going to talk about this in the panel discussion.
I'm not saying.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
Nope.